we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
All right, I'm here with a couple of cool dudes here. I'm here with Raffy again and Aaron Ewer. We're going to talk about a little bit about Raffy's background and kind of where he came from. I know we explored this a little bit, but I kind of want to just talk about that again and dive a little deeper into it. You've been in Minnesota for how many years now?
I think it's around 10 years now.
Okay. So, dude, yeah. you got there shortly after that 2009 deployment then, huh?
Yeah. So 2000, actually I came here in 2014. So 8, 9 years. Yeah.
Okay.
This is my 9th year. Yeah.
Nice.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So Raffy, just for a little background again, he's from Afghanistan and he was one of my interpreters when I was in Afghanistan. He was able to come to the U.S. shortly after. I want to talk about that process and also about what kind of sparked you to join the U.S. military side. Like, I think you said you were in the Afghan army for a little bit.
Yes.
I'm just curious what, from growing up, what made you, because the whole, probably all your life, you Afghanistan was at war in a sense. So what made you decide to ally with the U.S. forces versus, you know, doing something else?
That's a good question. So actually, when I finished my high school and the time, you know, I born in war and raised in war. So when I finished my high school, I said, you know, I gotta get in and do something that I can save lives. I see people are dying every day here. There is terrorists, people is coming in, killing people here, schools are bombs, you know, things like that. So when I finished my high school, I told my parents like, hey, I'm gonna join the army, Afghan National Army, and I'm gonna go and serve the country. And they said, you know, it's not safe. You see, every day we see people are coming, they're dying, their kids they bring back to their homes, and it's not safe. War is going on. And I told my parents, I agree with you, but you know, somehow I see these people are dying every day. So how can we stop that? Who is going to step in to do something and, you know, to defend these innocent people? We got to let our kids to go to school. We got to open the schools and all these things, you know, and somebody got to step in and to do these things. But finally, my parents agreed and they said, okay, you know, if you really likes to go and that's what you want to do, go for it.
Okay.
So I joined the army and I think it was in 2004, right after when U.S. got there. I think U.S. Army got there in 2001 or 2000, right? I was a kid at the time and didn't know what's going on. But after finished my high school, I said, now it's the time. So I joined the army.
So did your parents kind of put it in a way that you guys thought the Americans coming in was a good thing?
So after four years that, you know, when U.S. troops got there, it was still war there, but was day by day getting better, you know. It was a little bit got better in those times. And it was, to be honest, it was kind of peaceful until 2008 or 7 or
okay.
I would say after 2006 and 7.
Okay.
You know, it was kind of peaceful. But after 2008 and 9 and 10, you know, up to, you know, 2010, you remember, and 9, that was risky to being in the army.
Yeah.
But up to 2006 and 7 and 8, it was peaceful. It wasn't like really, really peaceful, but it was okay, you know?
Okay. Well, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. We got Latif that just joined us. What's up, man?
How you doing? Long time to talk.
Dude, you are looking good, my man.
Good, man.
Thank you. Look at your beard. You got
I know, right? Yep. I decided after I got out, I'm going to grow one and stop shaving, you know? So the other guy you see, you know, Rafi. And then I got another medic that was in the Army with me, Aaron Ewer.
How you doing, guys? You guys looking good, man. You guys look good, look healthy, look happy.
Thank you. Thank you. How you doing?
Thank you, Aaron.
So Latif was another interpreter of mine when we were in Afghanistan. He was my platoon interpreter. I learned a few things. Mostly, I knew how to say watermelon and ice cream. I was really good at saying those things.
Yeah, those seem like very helpful skills.
Because we go to the bazaar, and I'd be like, I want ice cream or watermelon. It was like always.
Yeah, I was in Guana.
I was like a medic in the middle of a war zone licking an ice cream cone.
That's the world, man. That ice cream, bro, you gotta get your fix.
Basically, just to catch up a little, Latif, we're just kind of talking about, you know, Rafi's background and trying to get a feel for what it was like growing up in Afghanistan and what kind of drove you to join the path that you did and become an interpreter for the U.S. military versus, you know, just staying out of it or anything else. So what was life like for you when you were growing up?
Yes, when I was in 2001, I think when the U.S. troops came to Afghanistan, I was very little boy. I was in high school, like in 10th grade. And after I done my high school, you know I took an English language course for 6 months. And after that, right away, I joined the U.S. Army as a linguist and interpreter. You know, in 2009, yep. My first job was with your platoon.
Okay.
And I started from over there.
How did you learn U.S. language in like 6 months, man?
Yeah, let's not skim over that. So you learned like, English in 6 months.
Like in America, it takes us years to learn like a secondary language. That's impressive, man.
Yeah, absolutely. In the beginning, like English was very weak, like... not like very basic things, you know, like we learned, you know, that we can at least communicate and keep communication with the local and the army guys.
And then we taught you all the bad words.
Yeah.
Immediately.
A little bit.
So Rafi, did you grow up learning English? Was that something that was taught to you really young?
You know, we had a subject in school all the time from, I think it started from fifth grade or fourth grade and up to high school. So we had an English subject there. At the same time, after finishing high school, then I was taking classes. At the same time, I was in the Army. After I finished my basic training, so I had to go outside of the base, and there was a tuitions places that you could do and get a tuitions, you know. So I had to pay for that and go outside and for 2, 3, 4 hours for those learning hours. And they have many different courses for English that you can join in, really good courses. So they had a really good teachers. And I went to I think a year or two, I studied in those courses. Plus, when I was in the Army, we had a Defense Institute language course. We had American teachers. Okay. And for a year, I studied there.
You were exposed to it quite a bit prior to getting into the military. How about you, Latif? Were you exposed to English at all before? I mean, you must have been.
Yeah, I mean, like as Rafi said, we had a subject in school, but before 2001, you know, the school was completely down because the religious school we called Madrasa, they took over everything, you know, like there was no English in there. But after 2001, you know, after the U.S. troops came to Afghanistan, after that, the English started, you know, in the schools.
Okay.
In 2001, I think I was in seventh grade. So after.
Me too, man.
Yeah, me too.
So, all right. So I was in seventh grade and you were in seventh grade. And when the attacks in New York happened, like,
yeah.
You know, everybody in America kind of reacted, you know, it was kind of a crazy time here in the United States. When you guys were like in your home country, were you guys aware that that had happened? Were you guys unaware? Like, how did that play a part in your guys' country and your society, like at the kickoff of that whole conflict?
So here's one thing that I remember. In Afghanistan, there was not much media on the time when Taliban was there. So people was kind of dumb, to be honest. Like nowadays, it's completely different. In last 20 years, people got a lot of education, their kids and media and all those kind of things. If you can talk to anybody, they can tell you like what's going on in the whole country. But before that, nobody knew what happened in the country and outside of the country. So I don't remember like what happened in New York on the time, to be honest. Right. But after somebody told me like, hey, there was, you know, this guy, Osama bin Laden was taken, blah, blah, those things we hear from the people. So there was no media that they can broadcast. Only the Voice of America was the radio that broadcasts everywhere. Okay. That's the media you can listen in. Plus, if you are rich, you have a radio on the time. There was no television and nothing like that. So people was really, really, I would say dumb, but, you know, uneducated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was no education. You don't know. And people and teacher and nothing was telling you the truth, what's going on in the country, you know, mm-hmm. and outside. So absolutely. We learned that after when the U.S. got there, there's people starting going to college, school, universities, women's, girls, you know, female went out to work, things like that. It never happened before that. So
you guys got to see, regime. So you guys got to see kind of how things could be and outside of Taliban rule and starting to open your eyes to certain things that are going on and understanding, hey, this is because, I mean, like I was telling, I think Aaron the other day, you were, you know, we went to villages where they still thought we were Russians, you know,
yeah.
they were like, hey, remember that village, Latif?
Yes.
They were like, you bombed our house. We're like, it wasn't us. They're like, yeah, you're Russian.
Yeah.
But so, you know, and that's the other thing, like, you know, how they keep people on that time to be uneducated. If I remember many times when I went on missions, people was telling us as interpreter, they were telling us, hey, these American people do not know our houses. They don't know our home address. You guys are the one that brought them here. And we were telling them like, hey, you know, these people are educated, they know what to do, and this is not us. But they were believing the interpreters as the one who is telling them this is good boy, this is bad boy, and this is your house, and this is my house. These are the ones that they're trying to find us and put us in trouble. And that's one reason most of the interpreter was killed there, or, you know, their family was kidnapped, or, you know, they weren't safe in the country.
Yeah. So they would go to those villages and try to figure out who was talking to them that was working with U.S. forces, and then go and find you or your family and kill them.
Yeah. If you remember in Logar province, you know, there is a border next to the Wardak in Logar, I think in Barki Barak district. One kid was on the time we were there, one kid who talked to American troops on the time after their school hours. And the Taliban saw that kid because he learned a few words in English and he talked to American troops. And the next day we heard that guy was killed by Taliban because of why did you communicate with him?
How old was he?
I think he was 13 or 14 years old.
Just for talking to U.S. troops.
Just for talking, like how bad they were. Mm. And if they find you're like just working with them, like me or Latif or anybody else, how, you know, I mean, they won't let you to go right away. They just, without any a judge or any going through court, they're going to kill you right away in the same spot. Oh, yeah.
Dang.
I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, that the Taliban kind of rule with fear. And, you know, like, where in America, everything's kind of diplomatic and, like, there's a huge process, like, prior to 2001 and even before that, you guys you had no choices, right? It was either do as they say or, you know, it's kind of death, right?
Right.
Yes.
That's crazy. That is just insane. Like to kind of like grasp and like wrap your head around the concept of like either you listen or you die. Like not a lot of Americans have perspective on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, they can take our side or die.
Yeah. So Latif, what made you decide to work with U.S. forces? And like, what was it that sparked you to choose to put yourself in that much danger? Was it that you wanted to come to America one day, or what, like, what was it, what you learned in school, or how did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah. So a couple of my relatives, they were already interpreter since 2002.
Oh, so that was like a thing in school you could take.
Yes.
Ah. And
they told me, you know, they encouraged me actually to join the army after I get my high school done. And they encouraged me. And also my father was a police officer, and his salary was nothing. You know, like he got only 3,000 Afghani a month, which was absolutely nothing.
It was like and, $50 US.
Then I, you know, like our economy was so bad, like we were so poor. And I also, the encouragement in my economic situation, it made me to join the army, because that time, you know, it was the best pay, you know, the army was paying. It was really good pay, like $1,000 a month. It was like pretty good money. And that's why I joined the army. And after I joined, like, I was thinking I will make it to the U.S. one day. And, you know, me and Rafi were the first two people that we translate our Tazkira to apply for the visa.
I gotcha. And, okay.
Yeah. So I mean,
you guys definitely earned it, man. Like, for
yeah.
Sure.
I just want to go ahead and say this, like, you guys did more for our country in 30 minutes than most people do their entire life in America. Like, you guys,
Americans, yeah, would not.
I mean, safety. I saw firsthand how, you know, they were in the middle of it just like us, you know, and
yes,
not carrying a weapon, weaponless, except for Parwez. He would carry an AK around. But honestly, like, you guys deserve it and earn it. And earned it, and I'm really glad to see that you're doing well. And both of you, I think, went to school there, and I think you graduated not too long ago. So it's just it's good to see that you guys are doing well, you know.
Yeah. Oh, there was. I mean, eventually, you know, like, I made it to the U.S. and came in here 2016. So working here, you know, I got a busy life here.
Yeah. So how was that transition? Like, how was it? When did you come straight from Afghanistan, or like, where did you stop in between and then get here?
On the way, I had to, you know, the transit was in Dubai, I think, but I straight came to here, you know, from Kabul to Dubai to here, to Minnesota.
Okay. And then you just stayed in Minnesota, and then you went to school?
I went to school only for a year or two, because after that I got my CDL and I got, you know, the logistic and trucking job. Like, I'm trucking right now.
Okay. There you go. You liking that?
Latif is small, but she's driving a long truck.
When you guys first started interacting with Americans, and then you first came to America, what was the biggest, like, culture shock you guys saw? Like, what was something that Americans did that was like something that was insane to you guys, that you were like, oh my god, this is real, like, you guys do this, you know? Like, what culture shock hit you guys the hardest?
Yeah, honestly, for me, you know, the culture was not too much different. It was not really shocking, because we were working back in with the army back in Afghanistan. We were familiar, but one thing, like one thing shocked me, that was like, I was thinking it would be so easy to get money and the jobs would be so easy. And I wasn't expecting like this stuff right here.
So how difficult it was to find work?
Yeah, because everywhere, you know, I applied, they say, what is your work history in the US? I say, I don't work. I didn't work here. I'm new here. You know, like I don't have a work history here.
Mm.
They say, no, in order to get this job, you have to have your work history in the US.
Ah.
I was like, yeah, that was, you know, very tough. Like I found that very tough for me.
Mm.
But after that, like everything got smooth, you know, got easy for me.
See, and then you're not able to put on there like, I'm the most American motherfucker in this room. You need to hire me. Like, yeah. That's what you should have put on the resume. I guess, how do you feel about where Afghanistan is now? I guess, Rafi, you know, start with you. Like, what is your family still there, correct? And
we are feeling so sad what happened in the last year. Even, and trust me, the night when it happened, the Taliban took over. The next day I went to work and I did a bunch of stuff that I was not supposed to do. Like I forgot things to do at my work. So my mentally, I wasn't on my job. And then when I mess up some of the work, then I told my supervisor, he said, hey, this is not what you're supposed to do. And then I told him like, hey man, mentally I'm not here and I don't know what happened, but you know, this is a shock for me because we worked 20 years for the freedom of the people and our country was moving forward. And now we are going backward. I lost my brother who was younger than me, who was in the army. After I joined the army, he came and he joined me too. And after a year, he got killed. So I said, now what would we tell our parents and my relatives? Like, hey, my brother was killed because he was trying to, you know, defend or bring peace in the country and serve for this country. Now his blood won't count and it's nothing, you know? So I was so sad and I'm still sad what's going on because now we are going backward. We are going backward. Women, the first thing they did, women is not going to go to schools. I have two nephews who is 15 and 17 years old. And they were crying second week and the third week. And they said, hey, one was in the ninth grade, another one is in the 11th grade. And they won't let them to go to school. They couldn't finish their schools. I have many other relatives that they wanted to be a doctor, they wanted to be an engineer, they wanted to be nurses, but their dream is die.
Yeah, because if they try to, the Taliban will just kill them.
Yeah,
they have no future plan for their life. So everybody's plans is dead right now. People, my brother who is going to university right now, it's a private university, not a government. And he said, why should I go to university? Because, you know, these people is already telling us like, it's not necessary. Go to madrasa. And I say, you know, don't worry about madrasa. Go to school and get your education. Education will make you educated person. It don't care about job. What, you know, it tells you the world around you, you know, things like that.
So why was the Taliban so, why was it so easy for them to take everything back over once we left? Like what? What happened with like the Afghan army or the police, or why weren't they able to even take some sort of handle on it?
So from my understanding on the media, what we hear and what we listen from the media, I think in 2018, there was a deal signed by US and Qatar, something like they negotiate with Taliban, you know, that, you know, let's make a peace deal or something. It's like too heavy to talk about that, but that after that they signed the peace, that's what happened. The Taliban was trying to because they're trying, they signed the peace that we won't bother American, but it's okay to bother Afghan soldiers and Afghan government, whatever you do, but do not, you know, attack on us and we will not attack on you guys. I think there was some kind of deal. And that encouraged Taliban to go move on and fight against Afghan government every day. But the Afghan soldier was so brave, they stayed for next 2-3 years in their fight until 2021. But the deal was signed long time ago, and that was a bad deal, I think. And the Afghan government was always kept away from that peace. They never let them to be involved in that peace. And I think that was some mistake that happened.
So laying off them, in a sense, gave them enough time to regroup and start gaining power again. And right. then the second we left, they were like, boom.
And there's another question is coming to my mind, like, so since I'm American now, I proudly say I'm American. Just
You're American, bro.
You're American, bro. You're 100% now, American.
I don't care who thinks what, but as American, I could say, like, we have troops in Qatar, we have troops in Saudi Arabia, we have in what they call it, in Turkey, and in many countries, right, in Middle East, right? Mm-hmm. Like from 5,000 to 10,000, 20,000 troops in each country, right? Mm-hmm. Why we wouldn't let 2,500 soldiers in Afghanistan, which was really helpful for the whole country and to be peaceful?
I can't answer that one. Yeah.
So in America, and you guys have probably heard this in the media, we have a statement. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Mm-hmm. Right. So like in my mind, making a treaty with the Taliban
was terrible.
It's negotiating with terrorists, right?
Right. That's my question. Why would we negotiate with terrorists?
I agree. I agree with you 100%, man.
It doesn't
like
make
one
sense
American
to
another, like that is like counterproductive.
Why would we bring them to the table? Like, hey, let's talk. The first day why we wouldn't talk to them there was, you know how many Afghan soldiers was killed in the last 20 years? Registered soldiers, 65,000 soldiers, young men. Like me and my brothers who was in that group. 65,000 register only ANA was killed.
Mm. And ANA is Afghan about, Army for people who don't know.
And I don't talk about police. I don't talk about the NDS. And I don't talk about all other security branches. It's only those people who was registered killed, 65,000. And if you count it, it's more than 100,000 people was killed in. But why would we talk to them and bring them here? Let's come on. We can talk on peace on the table.
Yeah, I wouldn't talk about peace with the Taliban. No.
Right.
So you lost your brother. So and we've all lost brothers and family members to the conflict.
Right.
And so like it's my opinion, and I think it's kind of a common opinion, that the way the conflict ended was kind of distasteful to all the lost family members, my family members, your family members, Duff's family members, all these family members. And like now we don't really have a voice in that, other than we have to like we have to carry the burden of our losses.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so that make me say it, like, you know there's many family they have that question. Why would we make a peace deal with them since they were a terrorist?
Correct. Yeah, why? I don't think we should have.
Oh, hold on a second, gentlemen. We got Parwez entering the picture here. Can you hear us, Parwez?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, what's up? We got Latif and Rafi in here, brother.
Rafi's here.
Rafi's here, Latif's here, and then I got my buddy Aaron Ewer. He was a medic. He wasn't with us, but he was a medic deployed the same time that we were.
So I actually just listened to the first podcast you did with Rafi, and he was from the Kunar Providence, and that's where I was when you were in Logar. I was in Kunar.
He was
okay. In Kunar. It wasn't a safe place. Kunar is one of the worst places, to be honest, on the time.
Well, I don't think much of Afghanistan is a safe place. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I just when I was listening to it, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to hear your voice. I wanted to understand your story prior to talking to you. So, you know, I could come here and like relate to you. And I heard that, like, okay, so like, I know the area you're from. I know like because, you know, I spent a little time there.
When I joined the army, I had to move from Kunar, to be honest. You know, it wasn't safe, so I had to move to Jalalabad.
Okay.
So, well, now that we got Parwaz in here, I just want to give him a little intro. Parwaz was another medic, or another medic, another interpreter that was embedded with our platoon. He was just in the fight just as much of as the rest of them. So Parwaz would pick up a weapon every now and again, and he'd always end up with a weapon somehow. He'd like either take one from the ANA or he'd get, we'd be like,
I like
Parwaz,
it,
where the heck did you get an AK from? He's like, I just got it, bro. So Parwaz, it's good to see you, brother. How are you doing?
I'm good, Daphne. I'm absolutely good. How are you? How are you? Rafi, I didn't, 10 years or more than that, 8 years, I didn't talk with Rafi. So I hope everything is fine with Rafi, with Latif, and everyone is here. And brother, I'm I did my job. I did my job. So
yeah, you did your job.
How can I say that? Sometimes we go out with you, and you are the evidence. You know all about it, our platoon. Sometimes they told me why you are doing this one for $700 per month. We had a salary. I said we make our country better, and we serve together. We build our country together. That was our purpose. That was our purpose to build our country. Unfortunately, we didn't 20 years. We did a lot of job, like the ANA, like the other people. All together, we built our country. But unfortunately, we lose the last part. I don't know, what should I say? That's the Taliban once they came all over Afghanistan. So I'm happy to be here and with my family safe. And you know, the Rafi and Latif and the other interpreters, all they are seeking for a better place, for a secure place. That we're in the first step that we signed a contract with the U.S. Army, they told us that one day we will bring you in the U.S. On that time, as you know, since
12 years ago.
Yeah, 2014, you sent me a letter. Definitely, you sent. I remember that. I have today. I looked your letter today. That I have got. Oh, so, I said, Daphne sent me a letter to me that I can get out of the Afghanistan. 2014, I applied. It's a long story that I came in Germany. My daughter born in Germany. They didn't give us a paper. It's a tough situation for us that nobody accepts. My daughter is she from German, or is she from Afghanistan, or is she from US? Nobody accepted my daughter.
Wow.
Nobody accepted my daughter. That's why I came late in US. That's why I came late.
So that was Hank holding you up. Interesting.
So I called you. I called many more that I work with them. So I appreciate it. From you, from your company, from Scott Davis, and everybody. I don't want to name, I don't want to mention their names. They helped me a lot. They helped me a lot. I appreciate it from my bottom of heart. Today I was here because of you guys. Because of you guys, I work with many companies. That only I have good memories. That was the 10 mountains.
Yeah, boy.
That was the 10th platoon. Everybody, from first sergeant, from the Lieutenant Davis, first sergeant, everybody, even I don't remember their names. everybody, when I called them, they are said, what should I do? What should I serve for you? What can I do for you? Everybody, even.
Well, dude, you, like we said, yeah, you were right there fighting wonderful. Beside us.
I love you, brother.
I love you, bro.
I say,
you're the man.
I say, in my whole life, one of the greatest guys, one of the best guys, I have met you. That you send me a lot of letter. You send me. You help me with the money. You help me a lot. You help me a lot. I love you so much.
Well, if I'm the best guy you met, dude, you need better friends.
You are wonderful. You are wonderful.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, man. You deserve it, you know, and like you, all three of you risked your lives to fight for your country and put your families at risk. And, you know, we trusted you guys as much with our lives as, you know, I'm sure you guys trusted us with yours. And, you know, you would be fighting right beside us, man. I think at first you were able to carry an AK, and then they were like, the interpreters can't carry weapons. And then all of a sudden, Parles, we'd be in a firefight and he'd have an AK.
They didn't trust us. They don't allow us. Otherwise, from AK-47 up to, I don't know, what you call a...
PKM or whatever.
PKM. All I know, because 40 years we have been fighting in Afghanistan. I know, but nobody trusts us. Oh man, I said, what's wrong with you guys? I came here to help you guys, and when you left Afghanistan, the second that was from airborne.
Okay.
Oh, airborne. All of them, not like 10 mountains guys. All of them, young, 22 years old, 20 years old. They didn't accept us. I say,
stuck up. Yeah. Nose in the air.
Yeah, I said them. I told them that never good in this others. So 2-3 times. They took me to the FBI. They took me to many questions. How did you know they put ID here? I said, I work with them. I have experience. Two times, three times. Do you remember that in Chark Party we exploded the Hemrap was destroyed. Taliban. And we were like one night or three nights in the Chark district. I said, this is my experience. As I told you, don't go this way.
Yeah, you know how Chark rolled.
Parviz, welcome to America, brother. Nice to see you, that you are safe and with your family. We are happy that you are made it to America. But here is one thing I want to add with Parviz. He's right. I can give you another example, Daphne, that one day, you know, I was a DJ there too. We had we had an antenna. There was on the corner a tower. In the tower, we had to put antenna for the radio station, right? You remember
that we had a radio station there?
So we tried to put an antenna on the top of the tower. So one of the soldier came to me and he said, hey, I would like to put this antenna there, and you would like, if you can help me. And I told him, man, do not put it there because it's not safe. You might get shot. And he said, no, man, they were new. They were just arrived here. It was a week old platoon. And I told him, like, I've been in church for 2 years now, but, you know, it's not safe. And he said, no, let me get in there and you can just help me. And I said, okay. So I was standing there. And when he got into the top of that tower, there was a PKM shot right in the bottom of the tower. They shoot him and he jumped outside of the tower and came down. And then his knee was hurting on that day. And then we called the medic. He went there and I told him, like, hey man, this is what's gonna happen. And then what happened, you know what? Then the S2 or S1, you know, the intelligence officer, he came and he started investigating me. He said, how did you know that they're going to shoot him? I said, man, you guys just came here a week old platoon in Chirp.
Exactly.
And I've been in every single fight here. Yep. I've been here in every single fight. We know what's going on here. And I just told this dude, do not go to the tower. It's not safe anymore.
It's and so crazy that they wouldn't take your insight.
How did you know from which direction they're going to head? I say, I have no idea from which direction they're going to head, but I just told him it's not safe.
Yeah. You know, and they would. They shoot at us. You poke your head out, you're getting shot at.
Brother. Brother, sometimes when you left Afghanistan and the second was airborne, and sometimes from Altamont, they come to Chark. We were with the another company. I said, sometimes you have to wait right here. That was my experience. They put ID in the tree.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They put ID in the tree. Sometimes you have to look like this. So we lost in during this 2-3 years, 1 month. I wish him the best place in the heaven. He was killed in Banduka.
I remember that.
Banduka, he was killed right there, and the Taliban was hung a rocket purple and in the tree, and they shot him in the two come to the windows of the Imrap. I told him many my times. Once they send me to the Fopshing, they investigate. How do you know that they put in the rocket in the tree?
Because we found a bunch of them.
They're like Christmas women.
I said to them, many years since 2006, I was work with them, not here in Logar. I was work with them in Kunar in Paktika, Coast Province, Ghazni Province. I worked with them many times, but they didn't believe us because we were locals.
And your guys' insight was valuable. Invaluable.
Nobody. Duff, do you remember? I have only go to the mission with a knife.
Yeah. I like his finger knife. He's like, I had a knife.
I told them whenever they capture me, at least I should have a knife to cut my health right here.
I want to, like, I'll do it myself.
I said many times, so why I should go this to the with him like this. Do you remember the lieutenant a little bit? He was aggressive. The first lieutenant, the first platoon.
Lion.
No.
I know. I can't remember
Corey.
His name.
Corey.
What?
Corey.
Corey. Yeah. That guy's. He was a little mad or the aggressive.
He was very aggressive. He was very aggressive.
Yeah. And my platoon, everyone from Lieutenant Davis before that, Lieutenant Wagi. Do you remember Lieutenant Wagi?
Yeah, I remember.
From that guys up to I don't know the ranks. I'm sorry.
Good.
Yeah. Everyone.
That's very interesting to hear, because, and I'm glad to hear that, because I think that was a lot to do with, you know, the leadership as well, and just our platoon, you know, because at our platoon level, you guys were part of the group,
like Afghan people that they don't have a fear. Go. Just we say go. Go, Lieutenant Camacho.
Camacho.
Chippel, the other guys, man. Camacho. I miss Camacho. That guy was wonderful.
I love him, bro. He's the best, bro.
He came from Afghanistan. I don't know why. Chippel, the other guys, what was it there? Oh man, I forgot the
idea. So Latif, Parwaz, I asked these guys earlier, kind of what made you ally with the U.S. forces? Like, what made you decide to either join as interpreter, or because I think you might, were you in the army before or no?
I finished my high school, and I graduated from university as a journalist.
Oh wow! Okay.
As a journalist, but the condition in Afghanistan, Rafi knows and Latif knows, whenever we look for a good job or for a better salary, on that time it was the best salary was to join with the U.S. Army as an interpreter. Because of that, we came here. And we want all interpreters like Rafi. Rafi was the commander of, I don't know, with ANA, or I don't know why. And everyone to build our country, everyone. Shoulder to shoulder, we used with the US Army, we come together to build our country. So nobody wants to be here in US, in Europe, or the other countries. Everyone loves their countries, and we appreciated like 20 years the U.S. come to in Afghanistan. They built our country. They built they did a lot for our countries. But unfortunately, we don't have a good leaders to make our countries better life for our country. Unfortunately, I'm in front of you and. Everywhere I can say that, unfortunately, we don't have a good leadership in Afghanistan.
So, do you still have family back there at all that is being affected by the Taliban ruling right now? Or?
Only my mother is there. The rest of my family, because of me, they flee from Afghanistan. My brother is in France. So my sister in Belgium, on my other sisters in Germany. So this is the first person that I came in US. That's me with my family. I have three kids and my wife.
Okay, how about you, Latif? Do you still have family over there that are at risk at all?
No. Only my mother.
My kids and my wife, they're supposed to come over, but they got stuck during the collapse.
So your wife and kids are still over there?
Yes, they were ready for the interview to be interviewed at the U.S. Embassy, but the embassy shut it down. And they were called, you know, my lieutenant and other NCOs, we were trying to coordinate with Marine in Kabul airport on between 15 to 30 August 2021. But they couldn't go through the people. You know, there were a lot of people, you know, they couldn't walk. So now they are waiting, you know, to be evacuated or do something.
Is there anything we can do to help with that?
Yeah, I don't know what we could do.
Yeah, is there anything at all? Do to help get your family here, man? Is there any way we can help appeal the process or, you know, get them to help the embassy?
Yeah, I really thank my lieutenant. He was also from 4th Brigade, you know, 10 Mount 4th Brigade. He was a John Conte in 2011. He's a great guy in his constitution now in New York, and he tried a lot. And he found a lawyer to run my case. And she talked to the U.S. Department of State and to coordinate evacuation. But my brothers and sisters, they are all there, but my also two kids and wife, they are stuck even with the U.S. visa case ready, you know, for the interview, but they're still waiting. They got stuck there.
That's terrible, dude. I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that they stay safe.
Good, brother. How you doing?
Oh, man. It's a long time after 10 years. Or more than less than that.
I spoke with you. I think I spoke with you in 2020. I mean, during the pandemic, you know, when I was driving my truck.
In, in group, we didn't get in touch, but we talked together. Yeah. Oh man, I miss you, man. I miss you a lot.
I miss you.
Hey, just so you know, we got to get together, all of us, at some point here, man.
This guy is a wonderful. I didn't talk with him like 10 years, more than that. Or in 2020, we have all the interpreter from the Fabsheng, all together. Sometimes we talk together, but today I see him live today. Nice. Thank you very much. This was you to you bring us all together. And yeah, Rafi, Rafi brother,
today I
saw
you guys spoke about how you would tell U.S. troops, you know, this isn't safe, this is a bad location, you know, and there was a trust building like period there. When you first came to the United States, did you run into some of those same problems where some of the U.S. citizens, not soldiers, but like regular people, had trust issues with you guys because of your appearance, or was everybody kind of welcoming?
I think local is different than army guys. Army guys is trained that way, that do not trust anybody when you go out. That's from my understanding. But local people is here completely different. They welcome everybody. They help you. They ask you if there is anything, you know, they listen to you, all the things. So we, in my opinion, I cannot compare the army with the local people. It's completely two different fields.
Mm. Well, that makes me happy to hear that, like, normal American people, like, embraced you guys and trusted you guys. That makes me happy to hear that, because, you know, that's not always the case.
And yeah, no.
There's a lot of, like, not nice people in America, and, you know.
Did you face any, like, adversity, Latif, at all coming here?
I want to say one thing.
One thing, like, when we came here, like at the beginning, when we say, where are you from? We replied like Afghanistan. They were thinking somehow, you know, they were thinking like kind of shocked, like, because they always listening to the media, you know, they were just listening to the media. And so that's all they were hearing from the media. You know, they were like, are you from Afghanistan? I say, yeah, I mean,
you're like, yeah, dude.
I say, okay, I was the army interpreter. After that, they say, oh, welcome and trust and friendly talk, you know. Before that, like, they were got shocked, like.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I want to say my experience. During this 1 week or more than, it's about 10 days that I have been in the U.S.
Okay.
And you know, as American guys or as a U.S. citizens, do you know that Baltimore is the most dangerous area? I don't know why the people say it. I didn't say that. Yeah, Maryland the same. Oh, why you came here? Why you are here? It's so many questions they ask me. I didn't know, because I have a friend here. They say, so today I went to many shops right here. All people is friendly. No problem at all.
That makes me happy to hear that, because sometimes Americans suck. Like, not
I think a lot of that is the media, like, too, man. Like, it's like ago, not every...
like 2 days ago, I went to Baltimore. So the people all look at me. Most of the people, they think I'm from Mexico or Spanish.
Yeah.
This is hello, hola.
Hola. Like, salam alaikum.
Only I speak English. Yeah. They told me like this. The all people, the woman, the kids, the all the people is friendly. I don't have any complaint about these people. Oh man, I love these people. All around me, that's even my neighbors. They gave us Wi-Fi. Still, I don't have my social security number. They gave us, sometimes they came to my door, it's a knock, knock, knock. They said, what do you want? I go to the bazaar. What do you want? They're black people. They told me, what do you want? We go to the bazaar. If you go to bazaar, we have a car like this. They helped me a lot. I don't really have a thought complaint. Yeah. So my kids are right here, and can I call my son right here, or my daughter, and my wife? Everywhere is safe. I don't have a daf. I don't have a complaint here.
Good. Just like I said before, guys. Like you, I'm really glad to see you guys doing well because you deserve it and earned it. And like, it warms my heart to see you guys.
That was you.
Well, Not me.
I still have your letter. This guy nice. like this, and Lieutenant Davis write me a letter like this. Oh, why you are not giving this? I was in Germany. They sent me too many letters to Sergeant Bond. Sergeant Bond, they sent me a letter to straight to the U.S. Embassy in Frankfurt. They told me, why you don't? What's your problem? Why you don't give this guy to?
Because they should, bro. Like they need to be giving you.
I love you all.
Me and Daphne talked about this the other day. Anybody who served as an interpreter in the United States, should be able to come with us back to the United States.
Yes,
there shouldn't be this like huge like diplomatic process for you guys. Yes. You guys. I mean, one of our interpreters over in the Kunar during a firefight when the ANA kind of left our side, picked up a firearm and returned fire to the Taliban and helped us.
Mm-hmm.
And like at the end of our tour, like, you know, we got orders to go back to the United States. Like we had to leave this guy, you know, a great guy. Awesome. Helped us out. Told us where the friendly villages were. We're the ones that weren't. And we're like, okay, man. Hey, thanks for your help. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. Just knowing that you guys had to stay there, and
unfortunately, we are not allowed to carry weapon.
Yeah,
well, you guys can carry a weapon around me anytime you want,
even a cell phone.
Aaron,
what's
up, Rafi?
Oh, hold on a second.
One thing I want to add, you asked this question from Perwiz, but from my experience, I got to share with you that when I came to the United States, I was on the way from the airport to my place, and a guy asked me like, hey, how do you see the difference? What is the difference? How do you feel now? You are in America. And I say, you know, one thing I feel, I will be sleeping without fear. Nobody's going to knock my door. I will be sleeping like a baby. I'm not and you know, that's the most important things for me, that I shouldn't be worried about somebody's getting my house and kill me or my wife or my kids. That's Rafi, the first thing I feel now. And then after, ask me another.
Go ahead, buddy.
Rafi, as I told you, like 6 years or more than 6 years, I was in Germany. So I can speak German very fluently, but maybe there's no one to understand the German language. But I came here from Afghanistan. After I said one of these guys, one of my platoon from Ten Mountain, from Airborne, from the, they're gonna help me because I put my life in danger. I serve my country, I can serve the United States Army. This is the only. Right now, it is about 8 days or 9 days I came to United States. I'm very happy, I'm very excited. If it is only me, it is, if I think for my myself, I can spend my whole life in Afghanistan. I can, in every part of the world. But I think for my kids.
Yeah.
I think for my kids.
Let me.
They have a bright future here. They have a bright future. Not as me, like I did my high school, my university. What should I do here? I should go to restaurant. Amazon or truck driver or Uber driver, what shall I do here? Only I think here, because the US Army, they lost a lot of people. I bring, let me call my boys. Every Afghan family, they bring 2, 3, 4 sons here. They will the next generation of the United States. Believe me. I said my son, go to police, go to army, go to serve for this country.
Mm-hmm.
From now, this is your country. This is your country.
That's what I'm doing now. Now I serve the country. I'm a correction officer. I went to university here. I got my 2 years degree. In the last 3 years, I've been enjoying being a correction officer. So yeah, the kids is trying the same thing. My kids want to be a police officer. They say, hey, Dad, you're a police officer. I want to be a police officer too. And I said, you know, that's a great thinking that you guys have. But, you know, once you grow up, and then we'll find out what you're going to do. Yeah, that's true. I agree with you.
Rafi, the army didn't accept me as a soldier, as a otherwise I will join the army. They told me, oh, you are now 40 years old, you can join the army. But I bring my son here. They will the future of the United States. I bring it. If I think for myself, I feel I can spend my whole life in Afghanistan. Even the Taliban comes, the Al Qaeda comes, I don't worry. Because of that, I bring every family of the United States, which is lost their brothers or their father, their son, every Afghan interpreters, which is came to United States, they bring 2 sons, 3 sons, 4 sons, even 4 sons. Son.
I have a former son.
He's 16 years old. Duff, you can see that he is fairness. He is fairness. He is the blood I have in my soul. The same the blood my son have.
Nice.
Maybe one day you can see my son. He's a police officer or the army or something else. I said this is from beginning of the 2022 July 1st. This is your country. This is your country.
You are, dude. You got, like I said before, you guys have done more for our country than most people do in their entire life.
Good time.
Man, what you eating over there, Latif?
Nothing.
always eating, bro. You're always eating.
Jim, you know, I just done my workout and I straight came here and I joined the conference on Zoom.
Well, Latif, I want to try to do whatever we can to help your process and get your family over here because, I mean, you fought just as hard as the rest of us for this country and your family's still over there and we need to make that not.
Thank you. I do have the key bill and the case number and everything. The case is in NVC, National Visa Center. They're all processes done. You know, they're just waiting for the interview. I send email to the State Department.
Give me that email address and we'll have about 100 people.
Yeah, can you send that to Duff so he can send that to me, man.
I will send it to you and also I will send you the KBL case number, which is ready for the visa interview and all the information. And I will send you that right after that.
I'll send something to him.
Yeah, man. I work with a bunch of people. I'm gonna have everybody do it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Email, man. Like, we'll flood this place with emails trying to get your family over here, man. Like, before I forget that, I want to round back to Rafi there. Just so you know, man, like no one should be afraid to go to sleep at night. And it makes me happy that like you don't have that fear anymore.
No.
To fall asleep at night. And I want to thank you for being a corrections officer because like a lot of people don't realize like the whole point of that is rehabilitation and reintegration. So like the point of our system here, our jail system, is to rehabilitate prisoners. And I heard you speak before about how you talk to these men as like human beings and you give them their 30 seconds of time and you show them respect. And I don't even think a lot of Americans do that. in our own society. So I want to thank you for like furthering your contribution to America, man. That's huge. And yourself as an American now, man, you're doing a lot for the country that even Americans don't do. So that's huge. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you. And I love to work with these people. Like I mentioned in my other interview with Daphne that I say as a working as a correction officer is that you got to be a real human. Those people are make a poor choices. They came to the jail or prison, whatever. You know, everybody makes mistakes. There are good people. They are mom and dad. You know, they have kids, wife, brother, sister, whatever. And once you got that uniform, that doesn't mean that you're a boss. No. You are trying to serve these people. And you just got to be nice. These people have a hard time here. And if you give them a hard time, they already have a hard time. That's not how you can, you know, keep these people safe and you know, you can communicate with them and they won't be on the page that you want them. If you're nice to them, they will be always nice to you. Mm-hmm. And they will listen to you. They will respect you if you are being nice to them, you know? So, I mean, I love my job and I'm doing what I'm doing, I think, and I will keep moving forward.
Nice.
Hell yeah, that's man. Good. That's awesome, dude. Like that's huge.
A good, especially coming from the background that you came from and all the war and the violence and everything going on, to have that perspective still and still have that sense of humanity and still see the good in people. Like that's most people can't do that. Most people can't go through stuff like that and still see the good on the other side.
Most people won't even try, man.
Yeah.
Most people live in like an isolated world of like, self-indulgent.
Brother, I'm sorry to disturb you. I bring this gentleman here in the United States.
How you doing, hey, buddy?
This guy's he look like me. He is like a 16 years old. I want to dedicate this guy to the United States. And look at this guy. He's very awesome.
Dude, you are. I'm so glad to have you here, man. And your dad is one hell of a man. And you should be proud that he is your father because he did a lot for you to be here in this country. A lot. Like I can't even begin to explain what he did to get you here. I'm glad that you're here, and I hope that you you appreciate him.
he is the guy that helped us to bring us in the United States. You have to thank this guy. This guy is a wonderful guy.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. we bring until the other one is right now is sleeping right there, and the second line. We say in Afghani language, we say the second line is sleeping right there. And this is the first on the second line, sir.
Okay, gotcha.
From my bottom of heart, I dedicate two of my sons here. So this is their opportunity to study here, to try their best here, best university, best schools, and best opportunity in the United States. I bring them here. Otherwise, I can spend my life in Afghanistan. As you know, that's only think so nobody says that. Oh, your father was traitor. He served in the United States. Maybe they will catch my sons also. They will kill us. Yeah. This is true. This is no doubt. This is not everybody knows here. Yeah. Rafi on Latif is here. Everybody is here. That's the one who served in NATO's or ISAF like this. They said, "Oh, you are spying for why you do it for you are not a good Muslim like this." You know that I didn't mention that all is this stuff. All people they know that. I bring my line here. They will serve for the United States. But I believe that. That's I put my life in danger because of my son, my other son, or my two daughters.
Guys, I might disconnect just because I don't have enough charge in my phone, but I will keep, you know, I mean, try my best. But if I got disconnected, that would be the reason that.
Okay.
I love you, Rafi.
I love you, Rafi. I love you, brother. Like, really good talking to you, brother. I hope we continue to talk.
Aaron, keep in touch. Keep in touch in my Facebook so we can keep in touch and maybe one day we can get together.
Oh, dude, maybe we're getting together. I'm planning something. We're getting together.
Maybe Duff, he can send you my phone number and we can talk.
Latif, Rafi, Duff, you're wonderful guys. Yeah.
Yeah, same.
You too, Parvez. Thanks.
Dude, I love. I'm so proud to have met all of you guys, dude.
How are you, man? I didn't spoke with you like a time ago, like 2010 or 2012. I didn't spoke like that.
Yeah, I think it's 2011, I mean 10, because you transferred to for Baltimore and I stayed in Chark and I started working with the 173rd.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that my platoon was also awesome. You know, the platoon leader was Captain Shuba. He was a great guy. We have
He's a great guy, yeah. We missed him. He came to Minnesota and he texted us, but it was in Ron Facebook. He did my Afghanistan Facebook. And after I saw that, I said, oh, shit, man.
Oh, that would be cool.
I visited him. You know, I have his personal number, and he lives in Dallas right now. So he's also a great guy. We have a Facebook group, and all the platoon is there. You know, we sometimes like we do here, but it's been almost
okay.
Yeah.
Dang.
Dev, what's a great guy. Yeah. Look, this guy is a great guy. He's a wonderful guy. Oh, brother, I love you so much. He was very funny. He didn't care. There's a firefighting. Oh, He made funny things.
Oh, I had to, dude. That's all I could do.
You know, Rafi called me like small boy, but I run like 65 feet big truck.
Oh, yeah.
But in the end, before Rafi leaves and he can see my muscles.
I think his phone's dying. He froze.
Yeah. The other two guys was their names, I forgot their names. There was a little, but one of them is a black guy.
Stovall.
Stovall, on the other guys a little bit.
Renderos.
Renderos.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
I remember
too.
That guy. That was wonderful guys. Once in the middle night, we went out like five Comacho Sheppel on to the other guys, like we on the only interpreters. We were five people. On the mask was announced that the Americans come here. They make a lot of problem like this. I hope like this. On every second, the Comacho said, what he says. I said, let me listen. Yeah. All suddenly the firefighting starting. Oh man, tak. We were five, only five person.
yep. And then, I remember that, man. Damn. Wow, it's crazy to think about how long ago that was, and to think about, you know, you guys being there after we left and still fighting. And the you know, for me, that was a year of my life. Up for you guys, to, it was your whole existence.
Up to 2013, I went to Ghazni, and I went to other province. I just look around like this, and I said, as long as I live here, I want to live. I want to serve for my country. I want to shoulder by shoulder by the US Army. They came here from other continent. They come here to help us. But do you know that sometimes the motorcycle they follow us. On sometimes they told me, Parvez, where is this guy? I from the 100 meter or 200 meter, I have to come back and ask this guy, why you follow us like this? Yeah, and they made me crazy. Why you following us? that they said, oh, you are despising these people. So sometimes you see me that I fight with them. I fight them. They said, oh, you are not Afghan. You are not good Muslim like this. Like this, they say, even in Baza, in Chark Baza, they come to me that sometimes you remember that in the middle night that there was a tailor. This is a tailor that we went to the shops and they said, me, you're not good Muslim. And so I went crazy. I went crazy and I punched in the face. Also, suddenly, the Lieutenant Davis, they grabbed me from the helmet from here. So why you punch this guy? I said, you don't know Persian. You don't know Persian. Why they kick me? Why they say bad things for me? They don't know. You don't know the Persian. This is sometimes even in the bar, they say, oh, traitor. But wow. You don't say that, sir. We remember your face. We remember your face. We will see you. Like a lot of recommended the comments, they says, oh, we will see you. We will find you like this. A lot of stuff. We hear a lot of it. They made me crazy. Sometimes, so I lost my mind. So I go to this strange pine chamber, but the lieutenant, the first sergeant, they didn't let us. Otherwise, I will kick him the ass. And so they said, oh, man, what are you doing? So, that was not in our contract. So they told us, you're not beating us, beating the other people, or you're not grabbing. So you have to talk with them very good situation like this. So you don't know Duff. They said a lot of stuff. Motherfucker, you. Oh, you said about the U.S. Army, you can get one here, like it's a big, this is a lot of stuff.
Dude, it's crazy to think about that, and I don't know. I'm glad that you guys are able to make it here, and most of you have your families here, and I'd like to help Latif get his family here. I don't know. Is there anything that you guys want to touch on at all that you think is important for people to know about your journey?
Do you have any questions for us?
Like, yeah.
On the other side of that, man, do you guys, do you have any questions on like our mindset or, you know, how things like progressed for us or, you know, anything like that?
I don't have personally, I don't have any question from you guys. That is life. We have to go forward. It is step by step. Go high on such. It is it's a week I've been here, and I tried my best. I tried for my family. I tried my best to at least they should go to school here. I know this is better school, better job. It's all everything is available here.
Mm-hmm.
But I try my best. I don't right now. I'm in the U.S. The most they said, "Oh, why you come to Baltimore? Why you come to Maryland? This is most dangerous. This is the most area that's the most crime they are doing here." I said, "I don't have any job with the other people. Yeah. I do my job. Why I should care about the people? I should care my family. You see a lot of this stuff. Why? Oh, no. Maryland is not good. Baltimore is not good. Like this kind of stuff.
But for you, you're like anywhere in here is an opportunity for my kids. Anywhere in America is an opportunity for your kids.
I can take care of my family.
Because if you were in Afghanistan right now, your daughter wouldn't be able to go to school, right?
Yeah.
So.
No. Forget Afghanistan. I'm not from Afghanistan. Right now, I'm totally upset. That's 6 years in Germany. I'm now in the U.S.
Yep.
You're a red-blooded American, like
you're American baby.
two of my kids is born in Germany, so they came here.
They
don't
know
how look like Afghanistan. They don't like the doctor. Even me, my wife is forget Afghanistan. They said, thank God, we came here on. Look at these people, very, very, very friendly, very calm. This is sometimes my son says, "Oh, father, if you were in Afghanistan, they will ask you that. So what was your job? I said, of course they all asked me. They too many pictures. I don't know whenever in church they took me a lot of pictures. This is all this guy was working with the US like this. I said because of you, I came here. Otherwise, the rest of my life, I'm 40 years old. I said the rest of my life I can spend everywhere.
Mm. Well, dude, Latif, how you doing over there, brother?
Good, brother. Just listening to the conversation.
Well, guys, hey, I just want to say thank you for coming on. We've been going for about an hour and a half. I think if there's anything else you want to add, let me know. But if not, hey, we should do this again and just get more in depth a little bit. Just I wanted to really just see how you guys were doing and kind of get a overall feel for people to understand what it was like, you know, growing up in Afghanistan and joining the U.S. forces as an interpreter and stuff like that, which I think we got across pretty well.
Yeah, that was our honor. That is, somebody they asked me, where did you serve? Like 10 years or 6 years? I said it proudly. I said. We were with the United States Army.
Yeah, you were in the dude. But so, Latif, what's up, Latif?
Yeah, I will send you the information, the case number, and everything.
Yes.
And the State Department email.
Let's see. So, I'm gonna see how many people we can get email on those people.
You can
not everywhere I can, man. Like,
I can send you my passport number, U.S. passport number, and everything, all the info that you can try, because I have my U.S. passport now, and they are family of U.S. citizens. They know that.
Yeah, they should be able to come.
They evacuated, you know, people from the street, but not the people who are deserved to be evacuated.
That's a very good point. There's people crossing the border, you know, every day.
This was a stupid idea that he made, you know, like they evacuated everyone from the street, but didn't give opportunity for the family of U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
So how about you, Rafi? Any last words here?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you're doing an amazing job. Keep us connected to everybody, especially Isa, for ways after a long time. Aaron is a new friend now.
Absolutely.
So, keep in touch. Thanks for everything that you guys are doing and trying to find out a solution for helping people. Appreciate that. And one thing, I did send you a message about my brother. You might remember him, that he also worked the same cop, the same district that you definitely work, my brother Sammy. You know, he's stuck here, there, you know, and I've been working on his case for a while now, sending text message to everybody who ever can help, and you know, even so I'm trying to get him out, his case under review. But if you guys can find anybody that I fear, being as American, we love our brother, sister, and
community.
And I tell everybody who is living here, like, hey.
Yeah, Duff, if you get that information,
be a productive member.
Yeah.
Be a productive member of your society, your community.
No, our society, neighbor, man. Our society. You're an American now. You're part of our people, brother.
Yeah. You are an American. All of you are.
It's our society, man. If you can get your family over here, let's do it. I want to take a second to thank you guys for being on tonight and just talking with us. And you know, I want to thank you for your service to like our mission in Afghanistan, and more specifically to like America, man. Like, you guys have all done a lot for our country and a lot for our people. And I think not a lot of people can appreciate that, like Daphne and myself. And I really want to thank you guys for everything you've done. Like, it's very big of you. And to continue on that, like, giving back, like, demeanor you have, that's huge. And I appreciate it.
You guys should be proud of where you came from and where you are today.
And that's so awesome to hear from you guys, because, you know, we know that there is a people that who appreciate our service, who thank you for our service that we did, you know, and that makes us happy, to be honest, you know, because it's like the same job, you know, we work together, we went on mission, the same mission, soldier yep. goes in Sea World, or anybody goes out, and we had shared the same sleeping bag, you know, I mean, yep. you know, all those food we ate together, we went together, we came together back to mm-hmm. the, anybody that's got hurt, anybody, but it, all we were on the same mission, and everybody was in risk when they left the cop. So we appreciate that you guys have that feeling. And I know that many of, you know, many other friends that I have, they have the same feeling, and everybody texting me and messaging me personally and asking like, hey, thank you, what you did. We saw you on Facebook, you're doing great, and things like that make us happy. But well, we'll continue to support mm-hmm. and do our best to be, you know, a great citizen.
I think it's important too for our kids to see this and understand like where we all came from, you know, especially right. like, you know, your kids, like you said, Parwas, yours were born in Germany. So they don't even know what it's like to have been born, you know, raised there. So it's important for them to hear these stories and understand where they came from. And like you guys escaped this crazy situation where if they were there now, your kids wouldn't be able to go to school. They'd have, you know, it's crazy.
My son, who just graduated from seventh grade, now he's in eighth grade. So everybody have a kind of a speech end of the class. So he wrote that, and he brought it to me, and he said, "Hey, Dad, this is what I wrote, and this is the essay that I'm gonna speech on the last day of my class." I said, "What did you write?" And then when I look over, he wrote everything what we went through on this mission journey becoming wow. as American. So he did write that. And I say, man, even I didn't tell this whole story. How did you know? He said, you know, when your mom was talking to mom and you were dead, and I hear that we were not safe there. And now we are here, and we are safe, and we go to school, and we didn't have this opportunity back there. So he did mention those things in his essay that
powerful.
Like, hey, my dad moved to America just because there was Taliban, and they wouldn't let my dad to live around in the community. They were always behind him and things like that. We moved to here, and now we are, my dad is a citizen, I'm a citizen, and we are schooling school here, and we wants to be engineer, doctor, and blah blah, you know, things like that. So that the background that he got and that idea. So yeah, you're right, the kids should know like, hey, how did we end up here?
Yeah,
it's a long story for them, you know. If they're a smart student and they're smart wise, they might write a books on this in the future, you know.
Yeah
I think you guys should write a book.
Yeah,
you know, gosh. I will I have a plan.
Your stories are, I mean,
Aaron, I have a plan on this. Once I finish my bachelor degree, I'm a year away from my bachelor to get it in criminal justice. So after that, once I'm done with that, I will be writing in this book, and I have this intent for a long time, but just busy. I have almost two full-time jobs and four kids, you know, who are going to school, yeah. being a father. It's not easy, but
dude,
you know,
that is a lot of work, man. Yeah. Like, yeah. I kudos to you. Most Americans work half a job. Don't go to school at all, brother. Like,
yeah,
you're really taking that American dream, and you're not even running with it, brother. You're sprinting with it.
Yeah, man.
And like, that's
y'all are, you awesome. All are doing great, honestly, like all of you. And it's great.
Thank you.
Hey, there's the other one.
He's another one. The other one is here. Yeah, she's my daughter.
How you doing?
Yeah. When she come to Germany, she was like 4 years old.
Okay.
She doesn't speak at all Persian, and only she can speak Russian.
She can what?
She can speak only German.
German, okay.
German.
She'll learn quick. She'll pick it up quick. All I know is da.
Yeah, because yes. Right now in the US, only they will go to at seven grade school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey guys, I'm gonna end it here. I wish I could speak German, but I can't.
yeah,
tell your daughter that I said hello, and that she has a really amazing dad. And you guys, you should be very proud of where you are. And you know, you should really look back on what you went through, and like, I mean, don't discount it at all, because you guys are as American as all of us, and you are what this country needs. So,
yeah, you know. Well, I will encourage them to be honest with this country. This is your homeland. This is your second homeland. Forget about that one. To where your father born. Forget about that. Yep. This is your country. Now, yeah. Right now for our kids, this is our land. This is no doubt that, yeah, you bring a lot of stuff. The other two ones is sleeping. yeah.
Wow. Yeah, brother. Again, thank you guys, Latif, Rafi, Parwez, Aaron, Ewer. Love you guys. And we will do this again soon.
Yeah, man, let's do it for sure. It's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.